Good afternoon, everybody. I see you joining the call. This is Emily Cooper from the Executive Office of Elder Affairs. Thanks for joining us today. Just going to give it a sec while I see everybody logging in. Okay, well, thank you for joining us today. Again, this is Emily Cooper from the Executive Office of Elder Affairs. This is one in a series of calls that we have related to senior housing and the COVID-19 pandemic. And these have been going on for as long as the pandemic has. So pretty much since March or April, we started with really focusing on issues related to the pandemic what is COVID-19? How are we reacting to it? Food insecurity, home care agencies, how people were changing their policies, and kind of working through this all together as a community of peers. You all are on the front lines and dealing with this. And as we start to see the numbers creep up again, we want to make sure that you're all supported. I encourage you to join our listserv, which is Senior Housing COVID-19 at mass.gov, or to email us with any questions that you may have. This initiative is part of a partnership between Executive Office of Elder Affairs, Mass Housing, and the Department of Housing and Community Development, as well as CDAC, with incredible support from Leading Age Massachusetts, who does the behind the scenes work, and we couldn't do this without them. So I wanna make sure to thank them as well. Before we get started, I know that you guys are experts, and this seems almost silly to be doing this now, but we spend a lot of time in my office talking about how technology is not always easy. So I wanna make sure everybody has a minute to understand how to use the platform that we're using and how to ask questions. So Lynn, I'm gonna hand it over to you to just walk through that.
Thanks, Emily. Good afternoon, everyone. So I just wanted to let everyone know that the default for coming into this meeting is to be muted. If you would like to ask a question or have a comment throughout the meeting, you will need to unmute yourself. And if you're on your computer, you'll do that by clicking the microphone button. And if you're on the phone, you'll do that by pressing *6. We do ask that once you've made your question or comment that you do re-mute yourself by clicking the microphone button again or pressing *6 on the phone. We will be using the chat box. There are multiple individuals who will be monitoring that throughout the call for those on your computer. For those who are on the phone and might have a question or comment that they would like to share, they're welcome to send me an email. My email address is lmonaghan@leadingagema.org.
Thanks so much, Lynn. And I would like to remind people, and you will all have to remind me, that if you are on camera, we can see you. And you can see us, which is often a thing that we don't remember these days. I'm sure at some point one of you will put in the chat room, your dog wants to come in, because my dog will show up right around there and be barking and want to come in. So I appreciate that ahead of time. You may see me also open and shut the door. So we up and here she comes. So just remember, you're on camera, although you may be muted. And again, I want to let you know that we have had a series of calls. If you are new to this effort, we have posted all of the recordings of all the calls, and we put the on Leading Age Massachusetts website. We put the link in the chat. If for some reason after today's call you were on the phone, you didn't see the link, you have any questions, again, Senior Housing COVID-19 at mass.gov is a central email address that we have set up. And if you have a question for DHCD or Mass Housing or just in general, we monitor that email address and we will get back to you with whatever information we might have. So today is a little bit of a different call because we actually have two topics that are a little bit separate from each other. One is a follow-up to last month's topic. So last month we heard about the Eviction Diversion Initiative, the EDI initiative. It was very timely. The state had just lifted the moratorium on evictions, and we had the opportunity to hear about the EDI initiative that was being launched by the administration to help deal with people who might be at risk of losing their housing. Today we're going to dig a little bit deeper on one specific element of that that is part of the EDI, which is the RAFT program. RAFT has been around since before COVID and before any of this. And so we're going to hear a little bit about the basics of the program. And then we're going to hear about what might have changed right now in relation to the pandemic. So that's going to be the first half of the call. The second half of call, we're going to shift a little bit and hear about agencies in your community, health plans in your community, health agencies in your community who might be willing to partner with you around needs for your tenants or your building's needs. I like to call this, I don't want any more ice cream socials, because that's often the marketing ploy that's used by a lot of the health insurers. They come to your buildings and say, oh, we'll throw an ice cream social for your residents. Nobody needs ice cream right now. They need other things. Your tenants need other things. So we're going to hear some examples of how you can partner with these agencies. We're actually going to give you the names of people to call if you want a partner, and what you might be able to ask for and how that might work out. So Lynn, if you want to load the slides, we're going to start with Amy Mullen, who's the program director of RAFT at the Department of Housing and Community Development. We're going to talk about RAFT and get through all the RAFT questions. And then Amy's going to leave for other meetings, and then we're going to switch topics. So there is a PowerPoint that will be sent out after the call, but you should be seeing it on your screen now. And Amy, I'm going to turn it over to you.
Great. Thanks, Emily. And thanks everyone for joining today. I'm really excited to have the opportunity to share some of the most recent updates about the RAFT program. Many of you may have already been familiar with RAFT either since COVID or before COVID. So I'm hoping today to kind of share an overview, some of which might be familiar to folks, and certainly take any questions that you have about the program. So if you want to go to the next slide. Great. So RAFT is the Commonwealth's DHCD's homelessness prevention program, residential assistance for families in transition. It's historically been a $4,000 program, although recently it's gone up to $10,000 for a subset of households who are renting and who are at risk of eviction. And I'll talk a little bit more about that in a few slides. It helps households with low to moderate income, up to 50% of the area median income. And based on legislative language, that actually increases up to 60% AMI. For households who are at risk because of domestic violence. IRMA is sort of a sister program to RAFT. It's the Emergency Rental and Mortgage Assistance Program that we stood up right after COVID hit. We were working on it through the spring and then launched it July 1st. It's really, really similar to RAFT, but it's a little more targeted. It helps people who are renting or owning housing now and just need assistance to stay there. And it helps people with income a little higher than RAFT. So we had heard kind of pre-COVID that there were these households who had income a little bit above the RAFT limits and still needed help. And so this was a way with some of the federal funding we got to expand eligibility to that income population. Applications for both RAFT and IRMA are done through the 11 RAAs, the regional administering agencies. They are nonprofits who contract with DHCD for a whole bunch of things. Many of them administer our Section 8 program or our MRVP voucher program. And they also administer RAFT and IRMA. So folks can apply directly to those 11 RAAs depending on the region of the state that they're in. And they'll take the whole, the application process from there. We always direct people, really, you want to get in touch with an RAA and they'll help you from there. We have a note here that they administer a lot of other funds as well. And that's just to kind of underscore this idea that tenants really should be getting in touch with the RAAs, because in addition to RAFT and IRMA, they're a whole wealth of knowledge about, all sorts of other housing programs that they may have in-house or that they might know about. Next slide, please. So these are the 11 RAAs. 9 of them have a contract with DHCD for something called the Housing Consumer Education Center, or the HCEC, and they're listed here. And then there's 2 others who have RAFT, and although they're not formally an HCEC, they do a lot of the same services. They provide housing counseling and housing information and referrals. Each of these agencies has their own region of the state that they cover for Raft and Irma, and folks go to that RAA to apply. Next slide, please. So of course, a lot of them are operating remotely during the pandemic. We've sort of seen since March, you know, everyone went remote at the beginning, and then DHCD is still operating remotely, but some of the RAAs have opened up in some capacity. Most have, you know, some staff some of the time in the office, but for the most part, interactions with clients are still being done remotely. Because this can change so often, each RAA's website is really the best place to go to find out, you know, right now, how do I get in touch with someone? Are they doing, you know, any in-office appointments? For the most part, it's over the phone or email. All of their websites also have a way to submit the Raft and Irma application online. That's new. I don't think anyone had that pre-pandemic. Some people had like an online intake system, but since then we've, you know, it was a real priority of DHCD and the RAAs to get that online so that while we're operating remotely, folks still have access. We know that not everyone has internet access or, you know, a device or an email address, and that's fine. They're all accessible by phone as well. We have paper applications that they, depending on the region, could, you know, mail out to someone. Some agencies might have a Dropbox in their office where they can kind of leave stuff for clients and receive documents from clients. But calling or applying online is really the best way to get in touch with someone and figure out the specifics of how to do the application from there. DHCD has a city and town lookup tool. This URL is not user-friendly, so we have it linked from mass.gov/COVID-housing-help. That directs to a website where you can find lots of information about Raft and Irma, including the lookup tool. And we really encourage people to look that up if they don't know their RAA, just because if they apply to the wrong one, it can just add time to the process to get it sorted out and redirect them to the right agency. So for both programs, if they're looking to get assistance to stay somewhere, they would apply to the RAA that covers that city or town where they're staying. excuse me. If they're using it to move, we would ask that they apply at the agency that covers the city or town they're moving to. The way we contract with the RAAs, they're only allowed to send out payments on behalf of units in their region. And so we have to be really strict about making sure they go to the right region. I will say RCAP and Central Mass Housing Alliance they're unique in that they cover the same region. So folks in that area can go to either one. That's the Worcester area. But we just ask that, of course, they only apply at one. They don't try to apply at both because that would, you know, lead to duplication in the system and probably slow down their process. Next slide, please. So Raft, in a nutshell, is again this $4,000 program that increases to $10,000 for renters who are at risk of eviction, who've also experienced a financial hardship related to COVID. So I think it's important to know the $10,000 benefit isn't just kind of across the board. It's really targeted to people who, one, are affected in some way by COVID. That could be a loss of income or increased expenses. And they're renters. They're either maybe already in court for eviction or before court. That either one is fine. But what the $10,000 benefit doesn't cover is all the other kind of stuff that Raft pays for. Like we can't use the $10,000 benefit to help people move out of a doubled up situation or, you know, for furniture if they're moving into a new home. It's really limited to those households who would otherwise either right away or kind of in the more medium term be going to housing court. And I'll talk a little bit more about that actually more in depth. But it's really designed to be flexible. You know, it can help people of all or households of all sizes and configurations as long as they're at risk of homelessness and can document that. It used to be that you needed a child under 21 to apply for RAFT, and that hasn't been a requirement for a few years. But we always like to call that out because I think some people do still think that, you know, it's a program for families, has families right in the name. There's no like children requirement anymore. A single person or a couple or folks with adult children or really any kind of household configuration is eligible if they meet the other eligibility criteria. And then we just have a couple things that RAFT can pay for. This is not a comprehensive list. Like RAFT could really pay for a lot of different things if it's connected with resolving someone's housing emergency. But a lot of people use it for rent arrears to prevent eviction, ongoing rent stipends to make rent more affordable after an eviction or after a housing emergency. Folks can use it to move, first, last, security, furniture, things like that to get people from an unsafe housing situation into permanent housing. Next slide, please. So under the traditional program, folks have to have an eligible housing crisis. And once they have one of these housing crises, they can access funds to resolve it. So eviction and doubled up are definitely the big ones and kind of what people think of when they think about RAFT. And certainly it's, you know, more than half of our applicants are facing one of those. They're being evicted from public or subsidized or market rent housing, or they're staying like on someone's couch, guest room, living room, and they've been asked to leave and find their own housing. But we can also help with all these other situations. So although these aren't quite as common, it's important to know that, that folks can access them for these, like a health or safety risk, foreclosure, overcrowding, domestic violence, fire, flood, natural disaster, and then utility shutoff when, now the winter moratorium on shutoffs is in effect, but when it's not, people are getting shutoff notices that can put them, you know, their lease in jeopardy. And so in those cases, we can help folks pay off their utilities too. But again, it's always connected with resolving whatever housing crisis they present with. That's, you know, we can pay for expenses that are gonna resolve that. Next slide, please. So for COVID, we got some additional funding for RAFT, specifically for those households who are experiencing a housing crisis and it's because of COVID in some way. And we're pretty flexible with, you know, that COVID connection. It doesn't have to be, you know, that they specifically had a case in their household or necessarily that they lost their job. But we look for them to self-certify that there's some connection to COVID. Which in most cases is a job loss, but has also been, you know, kids are at home and they had to buy laptops because the school didn't provide them. And, you know, so they were behind on half a month's rent or something. That if people self-certify in the application that it's related to COVID, they can access the COVID funding. If they don't certify that it's related to COVID, they can still access regular RAFT. So it's not, you know, it's not a requirement. It's just a requirement to get this additional funding. We introduced some new flexible policies to make RAFT kind of easier and faster to access given the higher demand during the pandemic. And we've relaxed a lot of the requirements around documentation. So we used to ask for social security cards for every household member. We needed the actual cards. We wanted ID, birth certificates for everyone in the household. Now we just ask for the photo ID for a head of household and that's it. We still ask for dates of birth and social security numbers if a household has a social security number, but we don't actually want the backup documents anymore. Also just add here that if someone doesn't have a social, that doesn't impact eligibility at all. But if they do have a number, we ask for it so that we can track their benefits and other state benefits they might be getting. We've allowed e-signatures on the application, which is something we didn't do before COVID. We expanded eligibility to, you know, while the moratorium for evictions was in effect, we didn't want people to have to wait until courts reopened to then, you know, then they would all come apply for assistance. So under COVID, you don't need a court summons to apply for assistance at all. We can help people even if they just are behind on rent or potentially even behind on rent, but can show that they, you know, have lost income and are going to become behind. And then we shortened the application once, and then we shortened it again in October, just to make it kind of as simple as we can for folks to fill out we do require, you know, there's some information we need and can't take off the app, but we did our best to get it down to a kind of streamlined, simple, and simplified application that is now live at all of the REAs. Next slide, please. So this is kind of the big news lately, the new $10,000 benefit. So it launched on October 19th as well with the new application. People can now get above $4,000 up to $10,000 as long as, one, the hardships related to COVID, two, this benefit's going to keep them stably housed for at least 6 months, or until June or through June if they have school-aged kids, and that's just to ensure that there's not a disruption with the school year. So that's whichever is later. And then third, the tenant has to be paying at least 30% of their gross income toward future rent. And that's kind of the standard for affordability. So we don't expect that'll be a problem for anyone. So again, it's not that they have to pay 30% of the rent, just that they have to pay at least 30% of their income toward the rent. They can pay more than that. We know that, you know, unfortunately, market rent housing can be very unaffordable, especially, you know, more so in some regions of the state than others, but probably everywhere. So a tenant, if they, you know, need to pay half of their income toward rent to make the rent stipends, the RAF stipends work, they can do that as long as they agree, you know, yeah, this is something I can afford and I'll stay here for 6 months. So this is really a discussion between the RAA or a court or community mediator, kind of depending on who's working on the case, with the landlord and the tenant to figure out a plan, you know, between the tenant's income and the RAF benefit. Will $10,000 keep the family housed for these 6 months? If it won't, the landlord may need to agree to waive some of the rent or enter into a payment plan for some of the rent in order to access that additional benefit. And in some cases, mediators are putting these agreements together, whether in the court or in some of the community mediation centers, and then kind of sending it over to RAFT. In other cases, the RAA is doing that negotiation between the tenant and landlord to find kind of the best way to package the $10,000 to keep someone housed. And next slide, please. I think this is the last slide. So really just the application process. Everyone's using the exact same application, but the processes do differ a little just based on, you know, the technology that the RAA is using, the software contracts they may have in place. But really, websites are the best way for information about how to contact or how to begin the process. Everyone's kind of got a little banner on their website. If you go to them, it's pretty clear, you know, click here to apply. You know, here's the phone number to call if you can't apply online. And again, that you can use the resource locator to find the right RAA. The timeline, you know, we're trying to get it down. We've gotten it down a little and we're continuing. All the RAAs are really working hard to get through the backlog of applications. As you can imagine, a lot of applications came in after there were some statewide announcements about the program and after the benefit level increased. So the new applications are sort of slowing down. We expect there'll still be, you know, many, many through the winter, but there were really a lot at the kind of at the start of this. And so they're working really hard to clear out that backlog, approve eligible files, and then continue on to the new applications. So we're asking folks to, you know, be as patient as possible. We know that tenants really want to find out their eligibility, same with landlords, but it can take, you know, from 2 weeks on the short end to up to maybe 6 weeks on the long end, just to get through all the documentation and communicate with the landlord and make sure that this payment is going to keep the family stably housed. So I think that is it as far as slides, and I'm happy to take any questions.
So thank you, Amy. That was really helpful and, you know, very clearly laid out also regular RAFT versus COVID-19. I know there's a lot of confusion in that area. I have, there's some questions that have been submitted and I have some basic questions as well. And some of it is just confirming what I heard. So I think if I'm working with somebody who might need access to RAFT. It sounds like the local RAA is the place to go. But what if I can't quite figure out which is my local RAA? That sounds like that's a really important part. You mentioned if I went to the wrong RAA, that could figure that out. Somebody says, how exactly does somebody without internet like find the right RAA?
Yeah, so I should have mentioned this. They can call 211. So DHCD entered into a contract with 211 for them to be able to answer some basic questions about RAFT eligibility, but more, yeah, exactly that, helping connect people to the right agency. And so 211 has access to all of our lookup information, and they can connect people with the phone number for the right RAA.
And is it just a generic phone number at the RAA, or should I be asking for the RAFT person? I know there's a lot of backlog, so I just want to make sure we don't wind up stuck in going around on voicemail.
Yeah, so RAFT is a good word to throw out there, certainly, if you're calling. All the phone numbers that 211 has and that are on our resource locator are kind of the most direct line to get to the RAFT department. So in some places, that's maybe the HCEC intake line. Some places it might go to a RAFT staff. They kind of all organize that differently, but it's not like the main RAA phone number. It's a phone number to get you as close to a RAFT person or voicemail as possible.
And whether I'm applying for RAFT or IRMA, that's the right number.
Yep. Yeah. And so RAFT and IRMA, we tried to set it up so that like a constituent doesn't need to know which program they're applying for, because they don't, like, you might not know. I think my income, is like medium, so I don't know if it's below 50 or maybe I'm at like 60% AMI. People just don't need to know that. They don't know that. And so the application is the exact same form. They just fill it out. And then the RAA is doing an income calculation and figuring out, okay, this is a RAFT application or this is an IRMA application.
Okay, great. That was one of my questions. How do I know if I'm 50% or 60%? Or I know that's a little hard. So I also heard you say I don't need to be a citizen, or you said I don't need a social security number. So this is for anybody, because I know that people often think that certain benefits aren't for everybody.
Yeah, so it used to be that you needed at least one household member with eligible immigration status to match the EA shelter eligibility, but that changed about a year and a half ago to match MRBP eligibility. So we don't ask about immigration status, but I think it can be confusing for folks, because we do want the social if they have one, because that helps us see if they've been in the shelter system. It helps us see if they've gotten RAFT or home-based before, because that can affect eligibility. It's kind of the one of the only ways we have to track someone's benefits over time. And now we're using it to verify folks' income as well through automatic data matching with other government agencies. So we do need it if they have one, but if we don't, the RAA just puts down a number, the same number for everyone as a placeholder.
So that could be an area of like, oh, they, since I don't have one, I shouldn't apply, is what you're saying, but that's not the truth.
That's not the case, right? Anyone can apply.
So we have some questions about length of time and getting in touch with people. So you said 2 to 6 weeks is about the time frame. And what if during those 2 to 6 weeks I'm being evicted, or my landlord is breathing down my neck? What do you recommend folks do when they're waiting for RAFT or IRMA?
Yeah, so if they've applied online, they'll receive a receipt that they can share with their landlord. If their application has been started to be processed, they'll have a contact person, because someone will have reached out to say, we're working on this, we need your ID, you forgot to, send us your lease, something like that. So they could follow up with that person if necessary. We are trying to get the message, like, we know people want to find out their status and that landlords are anxious to find out. At the same time, we really need the RAAs to be able to focus on processing the applications. And so it's kind of a balance between that and spending time answering the phone to say that they're doing that. The RAAs are staffing up, they're bringing in temps to just get through those apps that are waiting back there, and hopefully, be able to have some of that communication back and forth with tenants and landlords. The landlord could always contact the agency to find out if the application is pending or kind of what the status is, but the answer might be it's in the queue and we don't know yet.
And what if you mentioned to get the COVID-19 RAFT, you needed the landlord to agree that they wouldn't take action before a certain time. But what if the landlord says, no, I don't want to participate in anything?
Yeah. So that the landlord, you know, if they don't accept the funds, we have to make all payments directly to the legal property owner. So we're not ever paying a tenant. So a landlord does have to agree to participate. And so if they don't, you know, the tenant wouldn't be eligible to use Raft at that unit. They could potentially use it to move somewhere else if they wanted to. But yeah, I mean, the landlord does have to be willing to participate if we're going to pay them.
Okay. So I have some specific questions. If somebody has received Raft within the last 2 years, are they eligible? Or are they not eligible?
Up to $4,000 in a 12-month period. The exception is folks with subsidies. If they received rent arrears for subsidized rent that's based on their income, that's once every 2 years, just because that shouldn't be happening too often, hopefully. And most of the senior housing folks here, are you working mostly with people with a subsidy of some kind, or does it vary?
It varies. Because this is not just senior affordable. It can be any... And some of the folks on the phone are actually, we opened up to everybody. So some of the folks on the phone are service providers. Gotcha. So not just housing providers. So it's a variety.
Okay.
I see Aviva wrote from DHCD, wrote something in the chat. And I think you were trying to add to one of the answers Amy gave. So Aviva, do you want to unmute and say something and introduce yourself?
Sure. Hi, I'm Aviva. I work with Amy at DHCD. And I just wanted to highlight, you had asked Emily what people do if they're waiting for Raft and landlord breathing down their neck. And so if someone has received a notice to quit from their landlord or is at any point in the legal process involved with the court or pre-court, they can reach out for legal aid and legal services. So I will put in the chat for everyone to see the Legal Resource Finder, which is a website that will help them figure out where their local legal aid is. We also have community mediation centers that are up and running, and they can be referred by any of your agencies to a regional community mediation center as well. So I will just put that information in the chat. But just super important, there are free legal resources available, and tenants need to know about that, particularly if they're entering into any of the court process.
Perfect. Thank you, Aviva. I have a specific situation. Cindy asks if she has a client that's on Social Security, has not lost her monthly income, and she has not asked for COVID consideration regarding outstanding rent, but is 4 months behind in rent. Would she be eligible for Raft?
Potentially, yes. It kind of depends. If she has a subsidy and her income hasn't changed, you know, we need to, like, for someone with a subsidy, we really look at like what caused the non-payment, because it's based, you know, 30% of their income, it should always be affordable. And so if it's not, we need to know what happened. If they lost income, then they have to go get their rent share adjusted. You know, we can't pay for something that they shouldn't actually, you know, if it's not calculated right. If they don't have a subsidy, then, I see Cindy said she does have a subsidy. So yeah, we'd really need to look at like, your rent's affordable based on your income. So what changed? Like, you could afford it before, but you can't now. What happened? And see if essentially if there's good cause for non-payment. But that could be, you know, yeah, there's some other expense that came up that's more of a priority than rent right now. You know, maybe there was a big utility bill or medical expenses or something like that.
So should she go back to, should she go to the RAA for this discussion, or should she go back to who she has the subsidy from, if that's not the same person?
If there's been a change in income, always go to the subsidy provider and get it adjusted. If there hasn't been an income change and something else happened to make rent unaffordable, yeah, go to the RAA and do an application and be prepared to show, you know, verification of what expenses came up that made rent not able to be paid.
Great, thanks. Aviva, there's a question for you. Do you have any more information on the community mediators? And Aviva, if you do, just to the folks on the phone, those are things that we can also send out after the call with all the materials.
I do, and I'm just looking for it so I can put it in the chat. There was a link that I'm looking for frantically, not finding in this very moment, of course, but I promise I will get it to Emily and Allison if I don't find it for the chat. Thank apologies. You.
All right. So I want to give everybody a chance because we're going to actually wrap up the Raft Irma topic and move on to the next topic. But if you have not asked a question and you have one, please put it in the chat or feel free to unmute yourself. And I think you can unmute yourself on the phone by pressing *6, or you can, if you're on through the platform, you can just press unmute. So let me give it a sec. If anybody has any questions? Amy and Aviva, if folks have questions after this that they think of, what do they do with it? Is there a place to go? Is there a website or an email, or do they just call 211?
Yeah, so mass.gov/COVID-housing-help has a lot of the information that was shared here. We can share I'm assuming you'll share the slides out as well. But yeah, the mass.gov/COVID-housing-help is probably the best source of information for programs.
Great. Okay, and that is in the chat. Last call for questions on Raft and Irma. Okay, well, thank you, Amy and Aviva. You're welcome to stick around for the rest of the call. We're gonna switch topics now, but that was really helpful and really timely. Oh, we have a last question. How often are people denied for Raft?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's something we're trying to get more data on. It's because, you know, as applications come in, we don't always see the data immediately. There's a little bit of a backlog with data entry, of course. People, you know, there's a few things people could be denied for, maybe being over income, although now that we have Irma, that's not as likely. If they don't have a sustainable housing plan, they could be denied for that. But yeah, we don't have great data right now on recent denials just because everything. So we're still trying to get through all the applications that have come in.
Great. Thank you. Okay. Well, thank you, Amy and Aviva. We're going to switch gears. You're welcome to stick around, but we're going to turn to Brittany now. Brittany Botello, who's the home care manager at Coastline Elder Services, which is in the New Bedford area. In talking with Brittany recently, she started mentioning some great things that she was doing in conjunction with some of the healthcare plans known as SCOs or senior care organizations that they were able to bring to tenants in some of the New Bedford Housing Authority buildings. And I suggested that maybe she come here and talk about how she made that happen. And we are actually going to provide to you either after this call, contact people that you could contact if you are interested in making any of these happen, or if you have any other ideas of ways they could help. So Brittany has a few slides and Lynn's gonna load that up and I'm gonna turn it over to you, Brittany.
Good afternoon. Thank you everyone so much for having me here. I'm very excited. Collaborating with community partners is something that I love and something that I really enjoy. And I feel like once you put in a little bit of effort towards collaboration, eventually it just becomes a system that works for you that you no longer have to put the work into. So again, my name is Brittany Botello. I'm one of the managers from Coastline Elderly, and my presentation is called Collaboration Amidst the Pandemic. Next slide, please. I'd like to think of collaborating right now during this time as we are socially distanced, but not socially isolated. So not being able to see our residents and interact with them and bring in the same events that we were prior to the pandemic can lead the residents to feeling disconnected from all of the resources in the community. Given the generation that I work with at Coastline, they actually are more geared towards enjoying a telephone call. So a great way to connect. I know some of the younger generations would rather text. The generation that I work with, the 60 and above generation, really does enjoy telephone calls. So an easy way to connect and reach out is just to make a telephone call to those residents, check in with them, see how they're doing, see how they've been feeling, see if they have any needs. You can also reach out to them virtually. So you may be able to use a platform such as Zoom Actually, for the holiday next week, Thanksgiving, Zoom is offering unlimited Zoom shares that day. So people won't have a time constraint if they don't have a Zoom platform. You could also FaceTime with them. Another great idea of how to connect with the residents is physical mail. So I know often people think, oh, I'm going to get a letter because I have an inspection coming up, or the letter that I'm getting is a bill in the mail. But it's also really just a nice feeling when you get a letter for a holiday coming up, or because it's your birthday, or maybe you weren't feeling well and someone reached out to say, hey, I'm thinking of you. I hope you're feeling better. Face-to-face is always an option as well. So I know right now we have to be socially distanced and it's getting a little bit colder. So going outside may not be an option, but window visits, depending on the levels of where you are and if it's capable for your housing unit, that's an option. You can go to someone's window. You might be able to bring some carolers to the outside of the window so that people can participate. And then door-to-door deliveries, which I'll get to a little bit more when we talk about partnering with the senior care options programs. Just delivering a small package to their door, delivering them a crossword puzzle, maybe bringing them a couple of canned goods, anything that you can leave on the door. Those are all safe ways that we can connect with residents and with individuals and remain socially distanced versus socially isolated. Next slide, please. So different people you can partner with to help make this happen, because for you to do this all independently would really be a lot. May or may not have a residential service coordinator or a supportive living coordinator or someone in your office that can take all of this on. So I suggest reaching out to the community. You may have a contracted provider such as the home care agency that's brought in through an ASAP. So Coastline is an aging service access point. And then one of our housing sites, actually two, we have two housing sites that are supportive living sites. So we have a contracted provider in there at all times. You also have local community organizations. I'm in the greater New Bedford area. So we have things like PACE and Family Service Association, Catholic Social Services, but any of those community organizations in your area that address basic needs. I also recommend reaching out to your town or city hall. They may have a community services department that is often looking for ways to reach out. Next week's Thanksgiving, because of the pandemic, our typical meal delivery on Thanksgiving wasn't going to happen. The New Bedford City Hall, the Community Service Division, graciously gave me funding in order to reach out to a community restaurant to get individually packaged dinners for one of our supportive housing sites for any resident in need. So next week we will be bringing in 65 meals door-to-door delivery. And so it's a safe way again for people to receive their warm meal and remain socially distanced, but not socially isolated. And then the big one, the easiest one to reach out to is insurance providers, senior care options providers. Next slide, please. So who are the senior care options providers? We have Senior Whole Health, United Healthcare, Ballin and Navicare, Tufts, DMC, and there's also CCA, which is One Care for anyone 21 to 64. Next slide, please. So what is the senior care options? Senior care options is comprehensive. It's a comprehensive medical plan for eligible seniors that targets health services with social support services through care coordination. All enrolled individuals do not have co-payments, and the emphasis for all programs is community wellness. So really, the senior care options program and you have a shared goal. You want to keep the residents in your building well, and so does the senior care options program. They want to work with you because they want to grow. And the way that they grow is through referrals and contacts. So they'll come into your building to see if there's anyone who may benefit from enrolling in their plan. Next slide, please. So that's why you want to collaborate with senior care options programs. They have a larger pool of resources than some of the smaller community programs, and that shared goal that I just talked about, keeping the community well. Next slide, please. And if anyone has any more interest in learning a little bit more about Senior Care Options Program, there is some information on mass.gov. If you just type in mass.gov and then look up the SCOs. So what can you do with these SCOs? Once you reach out to them and say, hey, you know, I'm in a housing site and I have 50 residents or I have 204 residents that I want to connect with. What can we do? I know that in the beginning, Emily said, typically they'll say, oh, we can come in and do an ice cream social. But everyone has an ice cream social. There's only so much ice cream people can eat. And what are the residents really benefiting from the ice cream social? Immediately, they may have some social connectedness with their peers, but it's pretty short-lived. So it's up to you really to help develop that conversation with the SCO to find out what it is that you need. So you know your residents best. As the SCOs come in, they may or may not be familiar with the dynamics in that building with the town or city that you're in, but you can teach them about it. So right now, most recently, it's time for people to receive their flu shots. In one of the supportive housing sites that I work in, the residents have various issues which may prevent them from being able to obtain a flu shot through alternate means. It may be transportation issues. It may be that they are underinsured. It may be that, you know what, they just don't want to have to go out and leave their home to get a flu shot. So we worked with one of the SCOs, Senior Whole Health, to bring the flu shots to the residents. That resulted in about 25% of the building receiving their flu shots. It was also a great opportunity for us to see, is there anyone that we haven't connected with that may be underinsured? So without insurance, Senior Whole Health actually covered the cost of that flu shot, which was really important. Some SCOs have a mobile produce van, which means they will bring a van to your residents and they will give them a set amount of coupons or money that they're able to use to get produce off of that van. You can also get swag from them. So swag is any item that has their marketing information on it. Right now, masks, everyone needs a mask. Maybe they had a mask in the beginning of the pandemic, but now that mask has kind of seen its days and they need a new mask. Or maybe they only have one mask, which really isn't enough because they need to wash their mask between, you know, outings in the community. They may be able to get you some masks for all of your residents that have their contact information on them. They may be able to get you hand sanitizers, soap, back scratchers, shoehorns. They can get things that your residents need. So recently I asked all of my SCOs for something. I said, I want to make a healthy you bag to deliver to every door. And everyone gave something. So whether it was tissues or hand sanitizer, Band-Aids, chapstick. I actually reached out to Bristol County Sheriff's Office and got the file of life so that if anyone has any medical issues, it is on their fridge in case rescue needs to come. You can ask them for a door-to-door luncheon. So maybe where you are, there are many residents, maybe it's a congregate meal site, and there are many residents participating in door-to-door congregate meal delivery right now because of the pandemic, so they're not eating in the common area. It's being delivered to their door, but it might be nice to switch it up. You could ask them to work with a local catering company to get turkey sandwiches delivered. I've had SCOs come in and give the residents massages. You can ask them to have a nurse connect with your residents and do diabetic education for the residents, a blood pressure clinic. You could have them do a call a nurse, phone a nurse. They have new medications. They maybe had a telehealth visit, so they didn't feel comfortable asking all the questions to their physician. And they said, oh no, when the call hung up, I still have something I wanted to ask. You can ask that SCO to connect them with the nurse. So other benefits of the SCOs is transportation, and not just medical transportation, but social transportation. So right now where people are socially distanced, that is a key component for many residents, is being able to receive transportation somewhere that they would like to go socially. They can go see, you know, other people. They provide assistance with insurance applications. They have the swag, they provide food, and really the basic needs, your basic residence needs. If you reach out to them, they want to work with you because again, it's that shared goal of keeping your residents well. Does anyone have any questions?
Thank you for all that, Brittany. I think we can, yeah, thanks, Lynn. First of all, you get kudos for being incredibly creative. And like I said, I'm sick of the ice cream socials and I am tired of swag that is not useful. I've got a drawer full, right? Of pens are good, but you know, sometimes it's just, you know your audience. I have been very concerned as the winter comes upon us of masks and people having reusable, washable masks, keeping warm, hats. I think you mentioned, or maybe it was during a different call, you mentioned that you would partner with the mayor's office for a winter coat drive, right?
Yes, I actually just thought of that. I didn't mention that. So I had reached out to the mayor's youth council. Every year they do a coat drive. So right now it's the pandemic, so people may not be going out to shop. They may not have as many financial resources to get a new coat. So what I proposed to the mayor's youth council was to adopt my site for their coat drive. We are going to work with one of our laundry, contracted laundry providers to launder the coats, and then we will deliver them door to door. So we will have a sign up that says, yes, I need a jacket. I need this size, and I would like a woman's style jacket. It will then be laundered at an agency and delivered to their door. So we really just work to address the needs of the residents and not get another stack of, you know, notepads that are good, but there's only so many resources that the residents can use.
People are writing in that that they also have worked with SCOs to provide back to school Halloween gift bags for the kids. And so, you know, they're really, I think Brittany's point is look at your building, look at the people you're serving, and what is it that they need? And, you know, I think it's hard for the SCOs to think outside the box without you sort of saying, hey, you know, this is actually what I'm having a hard time solving for. So with the COVID, with the pandemic coming and pandemic here and winter coming, things like coats and hats are going to make it easier for somebody to go outside when it's really chilly like it is today. So, you know, as a mother of teenagers, we have more hooded sweatshirts in this house than we have ones that don't even belong to us. You know, if it said senior whole health, I'm not sure my kid would care and they'd wear it anyways, because they don't wear coats. but so really thinking about what your housing needs, as Brittany did, and reaching out to the SCOs. So we are going to send out, as I mentioned, to everybody on this call and through the listserv, contacts, housing, I think it's called SCO Contacts for Housing Partners. So at every one of those six SCOs that Brittany mentioned, you will have a person to call or email. Don't worry which, start at the top of the list, start at the bottom of the list. Don't worry about if you have a lot of people on that plan or knowing anything about health insurance. Call them, say, I have a building, I have this many apartments, it's for older people, and they will see it as a marketing opportunity and they'll work with you around that. Are there any questions for Brittany, or does anybody want to share their stories about partnership? I'm just looking in the chat here too. I know we're coming up on time too. Brittany, I was just blown away by your ability to fill out the flu clinic, and I didn't know that there was food trucks that they would bring. I'm sure folks have, you know, many other agencies that they're working with as well, but don't forget about these folks, I think is what the message is.
Yes, thank you. And like I said, in the beginning, it's a little bit of work to make that connection, but once you establish that connection, it's just about quarterly that you can expect to hear from them, that they'll be looking for what do you need? What do your residents need so that they can come in and get their name out there?
Yep. Perfect. Thank you for sharing all that, Brittany. We will get the PowerPoints and all the materials out to everybody on the call. I encourage you to join our listserv, because we also send out other things. So for example, the other day we sent out a letter that was written by the head of the Executive Office of Health and Human Services, Mary Lou Sutters, talking about how to gather safely over Thanksgiving, particularly if you have a loved one who is in some sort of setting, whether it be a nursing home or other setting where, you know, you may want to see them and there may be safe or not safe ways to do things. So we send out things through the listserv, which is Senior Housing COVID-19 mass.gov. We also answer questions. So we promise we don't try to flood your inboxes with junk mail or anything like that. But we sent out stuff about flu shots and the importance of those. So I encourage you to join. I want to thank Brittany and I think Amy, maybe Gon and Aviva for talking today. And thank you all for being on the call. We are going to have a call next month. We are going to do it. If we did it our normal time, it would be right before Christmas. So we're going to do it the week before on December 17th at this time from 12 to 1. Topic TBD, maybe, you know, how to celebrate the holidays. I don't know. But if any of you have topics you'd like to hear about or needs that you're feeling in the community, please send those along to us. Always looking for good information or looking for things to talk about. So thank you, everybody, and to our presenters and to everybody who makes this happen. And stay safe and have a happy Thanksgiving.